Hey everybody, it's Matt. Wrestling with Whiskey is back, yet another episode of Straight Shooting, this time featuring one of my favorite competitors I've had the pleasure to watch since joining the ranks of Impact Wrestling, someone who's been impressive to the entire wrestling world at large. He's got a really great story going on, and I'm worried about what I'm about to do to him because he just told me he's had about 2 or 3 glasses of wine in the last couple of years. I mean, I think I've had 3 times that amount of alcohol probably in the last 10 minutes. And that's with one sip from some of the stuff I drink. And as some of you know, some of the barrel strength stuff that I got going on from time to time. But guys, please welcome to the show, to Straight Shooting, the one, the only, Josh Alexander. Josh, what's going on, man?
I'm excited for this. Just listening to your intro, going over it, I'm just I'm excited, but my wife is even more excited to pick up the pieces afterwards if it is a rough go. So
yes, like I said, hopefully it shouldn't be too much, but you never know. The human body is a funky, funny place. So I mean, like on that topic, I just said it there because you had just told me. So obviously not. I mean, a big drinker in general. When did that decision kind of, or was it a decision, or did it just kind of happen due to lifestyle, etc.?
Well, I did the college thing where I drank socially for like 6 months and never really felt good about it. But like, you know, it got to a point with wrestling where, you know, it was detrimental to my success. So I just didn't do it. And like, I come from a long line. Both sides of my family, it's like a long line of just like people who abuse alcohol. Mm-hmm. So I never wanted to fall into those same traps. So I've always been very cautious with it. Like this, when you brought it up to me, I was very excited because this is something I've wanted to like dabble into. Like I when I met my wife 5 years ago, she gave me my first glass of wine. And you know, I developed a taste for that and stuff like that. And I've been mentioning to her, I was just like, I really want to try like whiskey. I want to know if there's a difference between like the people I used to work with, they're all like Guyanese, and they like value Johnny Walker, and like there's like certain labels. I don't know which one, like Blue Label is better than Red Label, and Green Label is like the king or something. And like they used to spend like hundreds of dollars on certain bottles, and it always fascinated me. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, Johnny Blue is the. Is the infamous like super duper high end Johnny Walker Scotch, and people sometimes spend dumb money on this stuff. It is interesting. I mean, there's a whole like undercurrent, and like just like there are like there's such a niche market for it, and people geek out over it the way they do over wrestling or over comic books or what have you. You know, like that was one of the things that really got me into it. Like there's so much more than just a bottle of Jack Daniels sitting on the, or like there's this whole like underground community and like collectors and all this stuff. It's very interesting. But so like I on that same note, then I guess given what you just said as well, so like if you are right now on a standard, you've busted your ass, you've worked hard, you're like, all right, I'm tonight I'm gonna have a drink of something. What would be your go-to? Would it be wine, a mixed drink, a cocktail?
It'd probably be either a glass of red wine or a vodka soda with like bar lime, you know?
Do you dabble in white wine or is it just mainly red?
I've had white wine. I just remember I woke up with a headache. So I switched back to red awfully fast.
That's so funny. I have the opposite.
Oh, okay. Well, like the first time I ever had wine, I went to like a famous steakhouse in Vegas with my wife on a date, and she ordered me a glass of like whatever. She's an expert. And like she used to be a bartender and all this stuff. So she ordered me something I needed with a steak. And like we were supposed to have a nice romantic night and everything, go back to our hotel room. And like I went back to the hotel room and passed out off like one glass of wine. I woke up like 12 hours later, like, oh, I that was disappointing, nice. I guess. But since then I've developed more of a palate for red wine. I'm not opposed to white. It just gave me a headache, and I just don't like feeling shitty.
Well, sounds like we should have your wife on this show maybe at some point. I mean, yeah, she sounds like she'd be a trooper for it.
Yeah, well, she's much easier to get to drink if she has the ability. You know, as a mom, you know, she would relish the opportunity.
So yeah, well, speaking of, yeah, so tell me a little bit. I mean, again, we have just kind of gotten a chance to meet each other and everything. Yeah, what is your situation? You know, you're married, obviously. How long have you been married? Kids? What kind of stuff you got going on with that?
I've been married for 5 years. I had my first son 6 years ago, and like I met my wife obviously a year later, and you know, we got together, so he's her bonus son, and we have a 3-year-old together since, you know, we got married. And it's a hectic lifestyle, especially with wrestling and everything, and like she holds down the fort, but luckily she was in wrestling. She's been in wrestling now for like 20 years, I guess.
Oh wow.
Just keep counting. She used to be in Ring of Honor, PWG, Jade Chung. And so she understands like everything I'm going through right now, and you know, she holds down the fort with all the kids and stuff, which is, you know, I saying it's appreciated is an understatement.
Yeah, I mean that's such a hard thing, and I think not enough people think about that. Like, and I'm in a similar situation. My wife obviously grew up and everything in wrestling, and was in it herself for a little while, so like to have someone who, because it's such a weird, it's so different, even than like sports and stuff like that. Just the wackiness of it, the schedule of it is just so off the wall. That it's, if you have someone who actually can get it, I can't imagine people who like just meet a civilian. I don't know what you want to call them, like, you know, whatever they call it, and like it's just like, yeah, okay, well, I'm just going off again to this rodeo show and Arkansas or something like that, and then I'm gonna go from there. Like, it's so nice to have that support system at home.
Yeah, I had so many failed relationships with people that just didn't understand the world I was in, where inevitably they would give me the ultimatum, and I'd be like, well, this was around before you, so it's gonna be around after you, sorry. You know, yeah. What I mean, it took a while, but you know, you end up finding that person that does understand the world you're in and understands what a signing in Connecticut means. On a Friday night, you know, missing a wedding for or something like that. So yeah, it's good.
So that, I mean, that brings me back to like rolling the clock back a little bit. And I kind of ask this to everybody. So for you, I mean, of all the things we as people can do, you know what I mean? Like, and I don't know if not everybody, there is a straight like reason that you're, they can't quite say it, but for you, like pro wrestling, why that and why not something else? You know, I don't know. I don't know if you did at school, excuse me, sports in school or anything like that. You had other athletic aspirations, but what was it about this weird, crazy, oddball form of entertainment that made you go, yep, I want to do that?
I mean, I was always a fan, but like the thought of me wrestling up until I was 18 was never in my mind as like something that was actually a thing that could happen. So like it was never like the dream of like, I'm going to pursue this and stuff. It just so happened that, you know, when I was 19 or 18, it was 2005 and the internet was just like kind of like taken off. And, you know, I was able to Google that independent wrestling even existed and discover this whole new world that, you know, otherwise was just completely foreign to me. And through that, I found a wrestling school, and, you know, it was just me following what felt right. I went to that wrestling school. I wanted to just see what a ring felt like. I just wanted to touch the ropes and stuff. I never had the self-confidence to want to get in the ring and actually attempt it or anything. And, you know, the guy made me get in, and from the moment he made me get in the ring, I never wanted to get out again. And it was just, it's been this constant thing of just following what makes me happy rather than, you know, I've turned down 4 or 5 careers over my near 16-year wrestling career where I'd be making very good money and be well established at this age of 34 years old and all this stuff, all because, you know, it just didn't feel right. And, you know, now things are starting to go well in my wrestling career. So it all seems like it was, you know, fortuitous or whatever you want to say. And it's all coming too. But, you know, there's a while there was just like, you know, some aspects of my life suck because I'm following this wrestling thing, but you know, the wrestling thing is what makes me happy. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So where did you train? I mean, did you train in the same place you grew up, or did you have to travel for that?
No, I went away to university, which was like 4 or 5 hours from my house to like near Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
And a wrestling school was available in Oakville, which was about an hour and 20-minute drive from my university. So rather than go to university, I ended up going to wrestling school and then dropping out of university soon after that, because university, my business management course that I was in, didn't make me happy. I didn't like any aspect of going to school. And then this wrestling thing was making me so happy. So I just followed what, you know, I wanted to.
How did, and I mean, of course, typically I feel like I hear that a lot. I mean, God, it's such a passion driven business. I got to ask, how did the family feel about that one? Or did they maybe not know at first? I don't know.
The weird kind of thing about me is, like, I only really have an uncle and my grandparents at the time when I was 18 years old. Other than that, it was just like my family was kind of either disconnected or just not around because they were, you know, in undisclosed locations. But sure. So I didn't really have anybody like hanging over my head to like tell me what was right and wrong or offer suggestions. So, you know, it was me just out there, you know, in a boat without a paddle, trying to figure things out. I always thank pro wrestling. And like, I say that I would never be the man I am today with responsibility and stuff like that without it, because I loved it so much. It was such a passion driven thing that at 18 years old, when I'm dropped in my ass on my own, and, you know, I have to pay rent and get gas money and pay for insurance and do all this stuff. Now I had to do all that stuff so that I could continue this wrestling habit that I so enjoyed. So it really gave me this like tireless work ethic to make sure that, you know, I could do something to support what I wanted to do.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. It does. It has this funny way of, I mean, it weeds out, like, I don't want to say like the weak, but like the weak willed, and like it'll force you to kind of to step up, because if you don't love it, if you don't like it, it will chew you up and spit you out pretty damn quick. So no, I absolutely hear that. And so, you know what, that's a good note. Why not? Let's kick this off then. Let's go into our first sample of the show. Sample A, if their labels stayed on, and they're beautiful.
Yep. Stay very nicely. All right.
So go ahead. So, pour that one out. Again, you don't even have to pour the whole thing. You could just a little bit.
you
need
now.
To be careful. Yes, you need to be careful. All right. Let's have the missus on standby in case she needs to finish it off for you. But yeah, all right. By all means, no pressure to finish these in one fell swoop. We are not taking shots or anything.
No.
So, normally when people drink this, it's very similar to if you've ever seen someone do a wine tasting, something like that. Same kind of idea. There's three main components to four, but I don't really count the first one, at least not when I deal with a lot of like American whiskey or bourbon, rye, stuff that I usually dabble in. That's color, because most whiskeys for that are pretty much the same color. It's come up with the douchiest word for brown that, you know, that, or copper that you could think of. Now, when you get into like wines and even like scotches, because of the way it's made, they can go from looking like almost water to looking like jet fuel. So like color is more important there. Here, it just goes from brown to darker brown. So the three main components are going to be smell or nose, taste or palate, and then finish. We always end with the finish, just like in wrestling. And so the first thing you want to do is for the nose, one, keep your mouth open when you smell it. It'll help not, especially for you, it'll help not punch you in the face with like burning.
Okay.
And just give it a little light, put your nose over the rim and smell it. And I mean, just tell me kind of what it's like. I mean, you don't have to be pretentious about it. I mean, if it's like fire, it's like fire. If it smells like alcohol, it smells like alcohol. If it smells, is it sweet? Is it spicy? Is it smoky? Is it,
Not to be the pretentious about it, because that's where I was going right away. Like, it smells like something I recognize. I don't know if it's
okay.
It smells kind of sweet, but it's like a cinnamon maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah,
no, you do know. You do know. Get that word, that phrase out of your vocabulary, because there is no wrong answer. That's the beautiful thing. It's all subjective. Okay. It's all Connor. It tastes like what it tastes like. Cinnamon. I mean, 100% cinnamon. I'm getting with it. So like try to think about that. Is it punching a lot, or is it seem kind of okay?
Yeah, it's not. I've definitely smelled worse, where I've had to like pull my head away very fast in my lifetime. So
Okay.
No, this seems, I don't know if it was like, it's a light smell or something, but like it's tolerable for sure.
Sure. Okay. Well, now we're going to move on. So we're going to take a sip, but especially since this is the first sip of the evening, and as well as, you know, first sip of something you've had in a while, really just a small sip, let it kind of, we're not even going to worry about tasting on this one because it's going to burn, tingle, and like numb your mouth out a little bit. Because that's the first one that you probably won't even have a chance to taste. So just a very light sip, let it coat your tongue. Yep. It's going to do that a little bit.
Just trying to hold it back.
Yeah, no, it's okay. It's not a bad thing. So, I mean, any initial impressions? Did it drink hotter than when you smelled it, you think, a little bit?
Yes, for sure.
Okay. All right. Now that it's kind of filtered with it, you take one more, very small sip, and Steve, you can just kind of swish it around in your tongue a little bit. Now, again, think about what you smelled. Is it cinnamony? Is it sweet? Is there more spice to it? Anything. Caramels, vanilla, graham cracker could be a note. It could be anything.
I was going to say caramel.
Okay.
Right away.
Very common.
The first thing I got. And then, I didn't get any cinnamon whatsoever.
Okay. Really.
Maybe I think what you're talking about is the finish, which is whatever this is now when I'm breathing and I can taste. Maybe that is that what the finish is?
Yeah, I was going to get to that. And you're actually, you're one of the first people to kind of like actually get, most people are like, I don't know. What do you mean by that? But yeah, so the finish is the final, usually after you swallow it, there's some lingering, like whether it's kind of like a tingling spice or it just like dries the roof of your mouth. It's kind of bitter. It can take a lot of forms. Sometimes things get sweeter. Sometimes things get hotter. Sometimes things get, like I said, bitter. And then they can go, some of them last 45 seconds and then some of them are in and out real quick. So yeah, was it long and lingering here? Was it really short? Was it like medium?
It was like 10 seconds right when I said it. I took a deep breath and I could taste. That's when I tasted cinnamon.
Okay. So the cinnamon kind of came back on the back end.
Yeah, I could feel it on either side of my tongue tingling and stuff. Yeah.
Okay. See, I like you. You're a natural. You're a damn natural. I'm telling you. Okay. We'll do one more. Again, this is one more very tiny sip.
Okay.
Anything else jump out to you about this one before we move on?
It's almost like, I don't know if it's like a cooling effect, but like it doesn't get hotter as whatever, as it goes on. Yeah. It seems to like it's not like it's warm, but it's not like it feels like when you put like Icy Hot on and it cools down, but it's not actually cooling down. You know what I'm saying?
Wow. Holy shit. I like that. Yes.
That makes sense. Okay.
It actually, exactly. When you explain it like that, it makes perfect. At first I was like, what? I'm like, what do you mean cooling? I'm like, oh yeah. It's like that, almost like a cool burn in a way. Yes. That's actually really good. I might steal that and use that on some tasting notes or something later on. Okay. Well, think about that. Overall, did you like it? Was it pleasant? Was it kind of meh?
No, it was good. Yeah. I don't have anything to compare it to, honestly. I've never had whiskey really other than like, what's the very famous one with the black label?
Jack Daniels.
Yeah. I had like Jack Daniels and Coke 15 years ago. So
we've all had that.
Yes.
So all right. We'll just try to think about some of these notes that you just had and we'll catch up with those as we go along.
Cool.
Down the line. But before that, so talk to me a little bit about, so again, you kind of left business school and you trained wrestling. How long did it take before you started doing things or working with Impact?
Oh, damn. That was 13 years to start doing like the one night only shows to get like a look, I guess. And then 14 years till I got my contract, my first contract in wrestling. I had like a very, up and down, whether you call it like luck or whether it was unlucky or not, like, you know, I had a lot of stuff happen where you know, I was starting to get momentum, and then just a speed bump or a brick wall would come be built right in front of me, and it was up to me to like get over it somehow.
Yeah,
and it just took me a little bit of time. It happened several times in my career.
And then in terms of like injuries or just like personal things coming up, or
one time I had an injury, I broke my neck in 2014. And yeah. And like, you know, this as a wrestler, like we say we broke our neck, and like, to me at least, I don't know if you can relate to this, it was just like, okay, I broke my neck, like I'll come back. Like I could name 40 wrestlers right now that,
yeah, no kidding, right? Yeah.
Back. But you tell any civilian, like, hey, I broke my neck, and they're like, how are you standing? What's going on right now? Like it's just, it's so insane. And it never crossed my mind that like it was like a severe injury. I was just like, oh, it's just something I need to overcome and get surgery and yada yada. And that's what I ended up doing. But I broke my neck. I, as a Canadian, there's a lot of border issues wrestling in America. So I got a lot of steam on the American Indies, probably 6 years into my career, 5-6 years into my career. So around 2010, 2011. And, you know, I was starting to get noticed by a lot of people, and Ring of Honor was one of the companies that was like talking about contracts. And, you know, I got turned around at the border and flagged, and that ended that one. And, you know, it was just one thing after the other. I would always be persistent. That was the one thing. So whether I had like a roadblock or something, it would take me another year or two to gain momentum again and start getting something else. And then something else would happen. And like, I was never an everything happens for a reason guy, but like now sitting where I'm at, I can say, well, yeah, this thing appears to have happened for this to have happened. And like everything kind of fits in place, because by the time I was 14 years into my career and I stepped foot in a like Impact, now it seemed like any opportunity they gave me, I was ready for, you know, to make the best of it at least. And otherwise, you know, if that happened 9 years in my career, I might not have.
Yeah. No kidding. I mean, and how many people, I mean, I can, I'm sure you know a lot too. I mean, who they meet one or two pieces of resistance and it's all right, well, I guess it's not for me kind of see or whatever. And it's like, it'll make, and it obviously it has, because like when now I feel like you're on such a incredible run, and everything leading up to that has probably prepared you for exactly like the, again, I'm with you. I'm not like a big, like fate kind of guy kind of thing, but man, the things that did happen to you really prepared you for the things that needed to happen to you, you know, later.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Also I think on the broken neck front, I couldn't help. I think a lot of people see, like, I think 90s action movies have ruined a broken neck for the general population, because they assume it's the Steven Seagal.
And yeah,
you're dead. If you break your neck, you're dead. Like your life ends. When it's so, there's so many subtle ways to break different things and, you know, discs and stuff in your neck that suck, but are recoverable and able to move on. But yeah, I think people literally that when I, cause I remember when I was like 13 years old and I thought about a broken neck, I literally thought about the Mad TV skit of Will Sasso as Steven Seagal just snapping people's necks.
Yeah.
And they did. Yeah. Cause that's what happens when you get your neck broke. You just die. So I don't think people understand it.
It was never even brought up to me. Like it surprises me. I did Taylor Wilde's podcast like 6 months ago, and she was like, weren't you worried you were going to be paralyzed or something? I was just like, literally it never crossed my mind. Like,
yeah.
Cause I wrestled with my broken neck for a few months until I had surgery.
You and Kurt Angle
with atrophy. Oh dude, I listen to his podcast, and I don't know if he's keeping count, if he's embellishing or what. Like, it seems like he broke his neck like 74 times. Like, he's like, Kurt Angle or Brock Lesnar hit me in the head with a chair and broke two discs in my neck, and I'm like, you didn't stop wrestling at all. Yeah. So what happened? Yeah,
so
there's levels to being a maniac, I guess. But
yeah, no kidding, like it's it's one of those things. It's not good, but yeah, obviously, ladies and gentlemen, we can live. I promise. I promise we can. So what was, in your mind, what was the thing that kind of, I don't know, put it over the top that made Impact go and finally kind of ink a deal with you?
There's a promotion in Canada. I was stuck in Canada because of the customs stuff for the last like 3 years. So from like 2015 till 2019 is when I signed my contract. And I just tried like putting Canada on the map as like a place to be. And one promotion up here called Destiny Wrestling, they had Pete Dunne as their main champion. And he was still UK champion taking indie bookings for this one company. And like, so like they had Austin Aries as Impact champion against him as Destiny champion, but he was also the UK champion at the same time. So it was like a weird, like three-way promotion thing going on where like this match would absolutely never happen anywhere, but somehow it was happening here. So this promotion started getting a lot of buzz and stuff. And I was the big baby face that came coming for like Pete Dunne after his like 2 year run as champion. And I ended up like pinning him. He was still UK champion at the time. He put me over and all this stuff, which is insane. And it was just that, I think. I had a string of matches with people like Rich Swann and Sami Callihan leading up to that match with Pete. And then I had the match with Pete. And the next month after that is when Scott pulled me aside and publicly in the ring after my match at that same promotion and like slapped a contract on my chest.
Nice.
Yeah.
It had to be kind of a cool moment.
Yeah, it was definitely I don't know if you don't know me that well yet, but like I don't sell much like in real life, and I'm pretty quiet and stuff like that. So like as he's going through it, like it was just like this weird like I was living in a moment. Like I could see my wife behind him watching with my son in the crowd, and like I could see the look on her face, and that's what makes me recognize moments more than anything, because I'll no sell stuff all day long, but like it was definitely something like I'll never forget. It was like on a very short list of things like that, right?
So what on the, in that run, that run in the independence, like who were some of like your favorite opponents? And I mean, I don't expect everybody to remember their matches, but if there are any that like stick out to you, like who are some of those greatest hits that you got to run with?
Oof. Like Tommaso, I had a really good match with him. And like afterwards, he went away. Like he got signed like 3 weeks later. He was already signed, but he left. And he messaged me like 3 months after that. He's like, "Hey, have you ever sent anything?" And I was just like, "No, why?" He's just like, "Here's the website. Here's this. Do it. Like, what are you doing?" Like, that's how good our match was and like stuff like that. Like, I'm like, I like to try to have the best match of my life every single time I wrestle. Like, I think that most wrestlers should do that. You know what I mean? Do it within the confines of your spot on the card, of course, but like, try to hit a home run every time. And like, so like when I get the recognition from like my opponents and people I respect like that, when it comes back to me and they're like, you know, you could really do something with this, because in my mind I'm just like, I'm just having matches, I'm having fun. And like that's the stuff that sticked out to me. So like him, the match I had with Sammy, I had a cage match with him, and actually it worked kind of my advantage. It was the first time Don Callis ever saw me wrestle. He was there to do commentary with Scott D'Amore, and it was a cage match, and Sammy hit me with a trash can. And the trash can is just a flat piece of steel that they roll into a cylinder. He hit me with the seam. So the seam hit me right here, and it went down to my skull and like filleted my skin back. And the weird thing was, I was supposed to get color after he hit me with the trash can, but the second he hit me, I literally went, "Oh, I have a headache. What's going on?" And then it was just like warm, and it was like Muda levels of color. Like, it was the most disgusting. Like, the promoters running around the cage being like, take it home. It's disgusting. All we smell is blood. Like, you're going to die. And like, luckily the ref, Harry Dees, a former WWE referee, we have a really good relationship. He came up to me. He's like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "I'm fine, dude. Like, just let me finish this match." Like, cause like, you know, like, if you're trying to like make a statement and get noticed and all this stuff, you know, these people are there watching. Like, I would have done it regardless if Don Callis was doing commentary, but just because I'm hard headed and like, I never want to like give up or quit or whatever.
Well, maybe especially not that hard headed, apparently.
Oh, no. Well, the skull at least. But I just like, nothing was going to stop me from having that match. And I think like that was a thing where like Don before the show, he couldn't be bothered to like, you know, give me 2 seconds. And then after the show, he was like, "Holy shit, man, like that was insane." And like, that's like Sammy and stuff like that helped me like just get over with these people. And that's the stuff that sticks out.
Did it fire you up, the feeling all the blood? Some people kind of get weirded out. They're like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. Some people I know are like, oh, okay, that's like the big, like, let's freaking go kind of moment. Whether it's intentional or not.
It definitely didn't scare me. Cause like, you know, the blood came down and I went, and I like put my hand up and I put my finger in what was like the cut. And like, I was just like, oh, I think I'll be okay. If I start getting lightheaded, I'll call it clearly. But like, no, it was all fine. It was just, I just had a headache really. But.
Fair enough. Well, let's drink to that. On that, let's move on to sample B.
B. Definitely lighter or whatever. Like I smell less.
It's not as strong in the smell. Sweeter, more subtle pepper.
No, it seems like a lot less strong from the smell. Okay. I don't smell much. Doesn't smell sweet.
Not sweet. Okay. Go ahead and give it a little sip.
Definitely spicier than the last one.
Okay.
When I say spice, I mean like when you were a kid and you put 20 cinnamon hearts in your mouth, like that burn you get from too much cinnamon. That's like the spice I'm talking about.
No, that makes sense, and that's something I've always tried to, especially when talking about it with newer people or people who've never even had it. There is a difference, and sometimes it's hard to explain between. There's an alcohol burn. That's the thing. It's just like, whoa, it makes your eyes water. Although spice does it. And there's and spice. You know, again, it's like you said, it's like when you have a bunch of cinnamon or like or pepper or something like that, versus like I think the alcohol burn kind of like, I don't know, it's more of like a deep-rooted pain than the tingly spice that kind of washes over like the roof of your mouth and stuff like that. But yeah, think about this one in terms of taste now too, compared to that first one.
I think it's definitely not strong. Well, it might be stronger alcohol wise, but the taste isn't as strong.
A little bit more subtle. Is it bitter at all?
It's definitely making my tongue more numb than the last one.
Okay.
Like the last one, I got like a rush of like some sweetness as soon as I sipped it. And then afterwards, like the finish is where I got the cinnamon. The finish on this one is more like just like a very cool effect.
Is it shorter or longer than the first one, if you can kind of tell?
I think it's shorter.
A little bit shorter.
Mm-hmm.
You like,
it's good.
Initial impressions, like the first one, still a little bit better?
I mean, I find the second one easier to drink.
Okay.
Because like that tingling in my mouth just seems to like numb everything out. It's a little stronger, but like it's easier to drink. It's just not as flavorful.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes perfect sense. So again, lock it down in the old noggin a little bit. We're going to have one more in just a few minutes and we'll determine all of them. But before that, kind of going pseudo sort of kind of chronologically, so like I said, now, I mean, you've been with Impact now for a while. Something I did want to touch on too, that I really, 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 and I wish I almost would have brought it up to share on the screen for the video, that I love. And you put out this tweet last month. No, it's not the one about the boots. We all saw that one too. and I hope that got resolved.
Yeah, it did. Thanks to TJP. Yeah.
But you put out this awesome tweet about, you finally getting to be at a point where you could hang up the boots from your shoot job, which for those that don't know, tell people what you've been doing for the past several years as work in addition to wrestling.
I've always maintained a full-time minimum 40-hour a week job, oftentimes upwards of like 50 to 60 hours a week while wrestling. Obviously with Impact, once my contract was signed and I started, it was 2.5 years ago now, I went down to just 40 hours a week, sometimes less than that, you know, wherever I can.
Oh, just 40. Hours.
Yeah, but like before that, man, it was like Monday to Friday, you're talking 10 hours a day, and then every other Saturday I'd have to work. So, and that was, I was in Canada, so I was driving back and forth. I go to a show in Ottawa on Friday and drive straight home for work on Saturday sometimes, and like just burning the candle at both ends because, at that time I needed my income, but, I loved wrestling. But like then when I started with Impact, I obviously, I could have, just done wrestling and gotten by and everything, but I have two children, a wife, and I live in a not so affordable area of the world known as Toronto, Ontario, Canada, where the modest home is $1 million.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to have that extra security blanket for so long, and I figured, if they're so forgiving with me missing time and stuff, why bother? And it was I was very fortunate I kept it because during the pandemic, when Impact went down to like every 6 weeks, we'd go to television tapings and I had no independent money or anything like that coming in. I needed that job. And, it was one of those essential jobs. Construction didn't stop. We kept building condos and homes and everything. So, I did that. And then finally, the layoffs came for me. And it was at a time where I was only doing one or two shifts a week, if that. And I just figured it was the push in the right direction. I finally, to take that leap and stop, being afraid of the possibility of failing and all this other stuff. So I took that leap and took it as a sign and just I've gone with it. And it's been good for the first month.
No, and like that's something. One, I mean, that's the kind of things like that just adds to what you were talking about before. To say everything that's been in your path or what have kind of prepares you for the next step in life. Again, whether you buy into the whole fate and everything like that or not, but it's just it's something I feel like it's a little bit of a misconception sometimes people have about some of their favorite wrestlers. I mean, like not everybody you see on every show is. Has some six-figure contract just because someone appears on TV, doesn't mean they're not doing all this stuff behind the scenes. It was a very cool. I took it, and I hope you don't take it the wrong way, but like a very vulnerable potentially, kind of post that you put out there, especially for someone who don't sell nothing. It kind of opened up to the world. It was very cool. I'd love people to. To see all that stuff that goes on in a lot of, it's not just you. There's so many wrestlers out there, both on the independents and even in some of these TV companies and stuff too, who on the outside of the that 1 hour a week you see them, they're pulling all kinds of avenues to make their dreams happen and everything like that. So that was just I wanted to touch on that. It was very cool. I appreciate you sharing that and kudos for you for, like you said, busting your ass. To get to this point and to get to that point in your life, it's probably a nice feeling.
Yeah, and to touch on like the vulnerability part of it, like I'm completely fine being 100% real and transparent with like the fan base and everybody else. Like if anybody out there as a wrestler can see that and get some sort of motivation that they're not failing because they have to do a job to support this and all this other stuff. Because you walk around independent shows and like there might be an indie darling on that show that makes $20,000 a month off their pro wrestling tee sales, you know what I'm saying? And like it's not that way for everybody. And I'm unfortunately not one of those people. And I had to do this. So like there's several other people that have to do that. So if it can help like them get through, because like I grew up as a fat kid. And so I'm very, very transparent about like my history of like dealing with all that stuff and being teased and whatever else, because I've had parents with like their children come up to me that are struggling in high school and stuff like that and be like, how do you get through this? And just like be able to be a motivating factor for those kids or anybody to be able to look at me. Because like when I was coming up, like my heroes didn't have Twitter to be like, hey, I was teased in school. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no kidding.
I couldn't look at Bret Hart or Kurt Angle or Eddie Guerrero or any of these guys and be like, they went through the same thing as me when they were 16 years old. Oh man, So if I can share that and help them out just a little bit, like it just numbs, it makes it a little bit easier, right? So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, on that, I mean, as we look forward, so. I mean, I guess to plug in our lovely place of work here too, because this will be coming out next week anyway. In just about a week's time, a little bit less when this airs, you will be at Bound for Glory, challenging Christian Cage for the world title. I mean, my question was going to be like, hey, like, where do you want, what do you see yourself doing in the future? Who else do you want to work? All that kind of stuff. But I mean, that's in the immediate future. So how are you feeling about that coming up? I mean, would you call this the biggest match of your career so far?
Oh yeah, hands down. Like Bound for Glory, I would regard it as the biggest pay-per-view in the company and main event for the world championship against Christian. You know, somebody like me, if you would have told me even 6 months ago that this match was happening or I would be in that spot or wrestling for that championship, I would have laughed at you. So for it to all materialize and for this to be happening now, you know, in under a week's time, it's insane.
Yeah. No, really quick, and before like that, I actually just remembered something I wanted to hit you on. So, I mean, in the lead up to this, you've had an insane run as the X Division champion. So, like, just talk to me a little, just briefly about. So, what does that championship mean to you, in terms of this, like, this last year or so of your career?
Well, I fell out of love with wrestling in high school for a little bit, like. It was pretty much WCW ended and I kind of watched the invasion stuff that happened. And then I got bored. There was no competition. So then when I was about 16-ish, that's when TNA started. I remember me and my friends, we got together. We were the very first Wednesday night pay-per-view. And like, I always say the same thing, but I remember the first time I saw AJ Styles and Low Ki, they were the first match that night. And it like Low Ki especially changed my perspective of what pro wrestling was. Like, this is a guy doing everything different and making everything look as legitimate as possible at all times. Some things maybe are legitimate, who knows? But you know, and like that was the X Division for me. Like, we would tune in every single week and then buy every pay-per-view after that. And it was just the X Division came up as like a bunch of teenage wrestling fans. We were like, we are going to see the most badass wrestling match right now. We're going to see things we've never seen. So like, that's what the X Division meant to me. And like, if I'm not like a belt guy, I don't like collect belts or be like, oh, the Winged Eagle is the greatest one of all time or anything like that. Like, there are people that do, but like the X Division title was definitely one that was on my bucket list. If I could have a bucket list that were like, that means something to me to win it. So when I did get a chance to win it and then, you know, go on that run, it was just me trying to do the same things that all my heroes did when I was in high school watching TNA. And that was like, just steal the show all the time and try to get noticed and try to like get eyes on the brand through what was happening in the X Division. And, you know, I was lucky enough to be able to do that with some big matches. And, you know, the TJP match, the Iron Man match was like the one I highlight as like the biggest opportunity I've ever been handed in wrestling. And like, I could have certainly gone out there. We could have failed. We could have gone out there and had like the biggest stinker of all time. And, you know, nobody would have noticed probably. But we went out there and I think we both exceeded expectations because like, he's one of the greatest wrestlers I've ever been in the ring with. And we had this chemistry. So, you know, that match was pretty much the springboard for what got me to this moment. But like, I can't overlook like that match I had with Jake something, I can't remember which app special it was, that meant a great deal to me. The match I had with Taurus the night after Slammiversary for whatever special it was, like I tore my lat the night before and then went out there and had the match with him. And like, it was like this weird adrenaline rush of like, I can't believe that went so well. And like, it was just, it's just been like super cool. I was very sad that it ended, but like, you know, I can't be sad about the position I'm in and what I'm doing now. You know what I mean? Like, I wish I could have done so much more, but like, that would have just made it even sweeter. It was already the best.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, then, all right, given that, yes, you did exercise option C. You vacate the X Division Championship to get this title shot. So, before we go to the last pour, I did want to know, so, given that now they had a whole tournament of people to kind of compete for the open title and stuff like that, who do you see as some of the next players in that X Division scene?
In your I think everybody's got eyes on Trey Miguel. I think Trey Miguel is like the fan pick. I think he's the overwhelming favorite if you're going to have to pick anybody, just because he's been around the X Division so long. He's been so consistent, so good, and he's never had that run. Like Chris Bay's come in and out and had that run. Like Rohit Raju's come in and had that run. Then you have like someone like Macklin, who's just like completely tearing everybody apart there. And I know he's hungry. Like, I know he wants to go out there and have the best matches he can and get noticed and all this stuff. So he wouldn't be a bad pick either. But I mean, my money would be on Trey. I think Trey deserves a little run there. And, you know, hopefully they can continue whatever I started, and the X Division can be even bigger than I could have made it.
Hell yeah. Love it. All right. On that note, let's finish your baby off. Last pour, sample C. You still standing?
Oh, yeah. I'm sitting. I'm fine. No, when I stand up after this, we'll see how
yes.
I feel.
Yes. So, yes, one more thing. Think about what you've gone before. How is this one resonating?
I just immediately was like, I smell fruit. I don't know what fruit, but ooh, I smell fruit.
Okay. That is, I mean, fruit is a common, it can be common note. I mean, there's, but a lot of people, especially kind of newer, don't really get that. So I love that. I mean, like strawberry, cherry, a little bit, like red fruit, dark red fruit kind of stuff.
Yeah, I was gonna go with cherry, but
okay.
Yeah, now I can't smell anything because I've smelled it three times. So.
All right, we'll go ahead and take a little sip.
Definitely way smoother than okay. The other two. Like, it's like thicker.
Okay, more of a we have actually a word for that. It's like mouth. I don't like the word, but it's like mouthfeel, right? Okay. It's a little bit more viscous. It's a little bit, yeah. There's a little bit more body to it. Maybe that's the word. Is the drink punchier? Is it lighter? Does it seem like more alcohol or less alcohol than the others?
I feel like the middle one was the strongest alcohol, the B. This is somewhere I can't really remember A that much, but it might be slightly above A as well. But
is this one, and then finish on this one as well. Is it long? Is it lingering? Is it kind of short? Medium?
This one's like you're breathing fire. Yeah, a little bit at the end.
Okay.
But it's not as tingly as the middle one, as B was. Like, this one doesn't even like burn my tongue or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I taste like a lot of kind of caramel in this one. Maybe okay. I'm wrong, but we'll see.
There is no wrong. I had a ruler. Okay, I slapped your wrist. There is no wrong. you taste what you taste. You get what you get. So I mean, given what you've had, and if you need to go back, or by all means do, but. If you have any idea of how you might rate these, you know, from favorite to least favorite.
I would probably go CBA.
CBA. So reverse order.
Yeah. Basically. I just retried A and I don't like it compared to the other two I've had now.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. I'm actually really glad you said that. Okay. Well, that's perfect. So then I will go in like reverse order of your picks, and I'll go in the regular order that we had them. So I'll start with A, which has now been your least favorite. And what A is, what you had, and by the way, so I try to do a theme with everybody. Sometimes the theme's really good. It is like really clever, like relates to the person. Sometimes it's just like a lame attempt at a theme. So I'm like, you're such a good, like technically sound wrestler. This is the corniest thing I come up with. I'm like, I'm going to call this theme catch as cask strength instead of catch as catch can. So all of these whiskeys are cask strength. They're uncut, unfiltered. They're barrel, what we call barrel proof or batch proof or whatever. But yeah, because most whiskeys get watered down to a certain proof level that they have approved on their label. Like even like, what do you call it? Jack Daniel's standard 80 proof. That's a standard spirit proof, 80 proof, 40% alcohol. These are all full on cash strength uncut. So the first one we have is a bottle called Penelope Bourbon. So this is barrel strength Penelope Bourbon. This is a pretty small independent company, kind of like think, you know, craft beer, but whiskey. So yeah. they actually even outsource the distillation to somebody else because they don't have their own distillery up and running yet. And this is what we call a four grain bourbon, which is the primary ingredient is corn, but there's actually three different, like what we call mash bills or like ingredient styles of whiskey that are blended to make this. So one of them, two of them have rye as their second grain. It's corn, rye, and then malted barley. And then they added in another bourbon that has wheat, which is often a little softer and a little sweeter in this. So there's four grains, corn, rye, wheat, and then barley that makes this one. So it makes it a little bit more, some people like them, some people don't. It can be a little bit more divisive, but it does make it a little bit more layered sometimes. And that's pretty young. This is about 3.5 years old, 4 years old, which for bourbon is kind of on the younger side. 8 to 10 years old is probably a prime bourbon time. But so that's it's young. And the proof on that one was 115.8.
Is that, what does that mean?
So the basic proof, whatever proof is, divide it in half, and that's your percentage of alcohol. So this was,
oh good,
57.6%.
All right.
Which actually for cash strength is kind of low, because I won't get into the details, but like legally, to be bourbon, you can't put it into your barrel at more than 125. But most people push that because it economically makes more sense, which means sometimes cash strength can end up being 140 proof or more, which is a lot. So, but moving along, B, sample B, which drinks a lot, like you said, drinks a little bit more punchy, which is kind of funny because it's almost the exact same proof, but it's not as rough as the first one, is what we call Prideful Goat, which actually makes sense because right now you're on the goat run of your career. But so this is a 15-year bourbon. This is an old-ass bourbon, which more time in the barrel adds a lot more character. It can add a little bit more of a bitter, woody note to it, but it can also round out a lot of the rough edges. That's one of the advantages of longer aging. Some of that stuff, when it's really young, can be really just like, it is spicy, it is rough, it's just, it's harsh. It tastes a little harsher. When you got double digits in the barrel, if nothing else, even if the flavor's a little off, it can be a little bit more, like I said, just kind of smoothed out around the edges. And so that's one way this drinks the way it does. And this is actually, this is surprisingly affordable. This is like $110 for a 15-year whiskey, which in today's market right now, bourbon whiskey is like super like trendy. Anything over 10 years old, I see for like $200 or more. Often, not everything, but so this is actually kind of a rare deal for that. And finally, what ended up being your favorite, which I'm going to take a little bit of pride in, is a bottle of, it's called New Riff. They're kind of a younger distillery as well. They've only been around 6, 7, 8 years, something like that. But this is actually a single, what we call single barrel, which means it came from one individual barrel that actually I picked.
Oh, there you go. So it's on you.
Yeah. So like this is a company with a barrel kind of club that I helped run. We went to this distillery, picked out an individual barrel because barrels can age so uniquely, even if they're in like the same warehouse. One barrel tastes a little bit different. This one's a little bit spicier. This one, blah, blah, blah. What's cool about this is their stuff is really, really good. And you selected it as your favorite. Their single barrels in particular are really nice. And they're young. They're only 4 years old. So like, it's really not a crazy old product. I think they drink more mature, more flavorful than they have any right to be. And this was the lightest one you drank tonight too. This is 105.7 proof, so it's 51.85% ABV. So pretty for cash strength, for being uncut, no water, no nothing added, and it's only 105 proof, is actually really good because they go into the barrel at a much lower proof, which means their cask strength doesn't end up that high, which I think is nice because you still get full flavor without getting punched in the face, getting a potato worth of worth of proof. So those are the ones. For those of you at home, if you want to check those out or whatever, those are the ones we had tonight. And first whiskeys you've had in a while. I mean, what'd you think? Could you see yourself from time to time sipping on something like these?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, this is what I told my wife. I was like, sometimes, like, when I'm home on a Friday night, I'd like to just like wind down and have like a glass of something. And like, I would
And
definitely
that's the
get
nice
whatever
thing
that
about it.
third bottle was, you know?
Well, you know what? I got a couple of them. Let me see. Let me see if I can. Hopefully, I don't know if I have any more of this barrel left, but I'll see what I can do for you. Maybe see you in Vegas.
All right.
But
I gotta thank you for buying me the expensive drinks since a bottle's $200. It seems
well,
insane, but
not the, so like that middle one, like. Yeah, you'd be surprised. Some of the ones that are even like younger. Like my friend is the one who helps produce this one, and he wanted to make it a very fair price because the market is insane right now. So, but like this, the first one we had is like $50.
okay.
This one that I picked when after if we were to sell that in stores, which we didn't, it would have been probably about $50. And then yeah, this one's like $110 or something like that. But there are some that are 10, 12 years old, like I said, depending on the label. Just it's like fashion, man. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
depending on who's fan, there are certain companies that have a reputation. And even if there's something that's better, but because it has that name on the sticker, it's $100 more or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's commerce for you. But before we go, I mean, thank you obviously for your time, for being on the show and everything. And yeah, before we go, usual podcast mumbo jumbo. Let people know any where they we can find you, socials, all that good stuff.
Instagram and Twitter, it's at walking underscore weapon for all the genuine vulnerable content that we've laid out there today. I just want to thank you for having me on, dude. I've actually like as I said when you even suggested it was like something I've had a curiosity about, and I felt like I've learned a lot today.
Awesome. Well, no, I'm glad. If you ever have questions or like ask want to know suggestions or anything like that, I'm always obviously down to nerd out about that stuff. So
Sweet, no
I
bother,
appreciate you taking
dude.
the time. Appreciate you being here.
Cool, brother.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Once again, always be trying new things, always be expanding your horizons. Get to a new hobby, maybe a new something that you might enjoy. And of course, always, always, always. Be wrestling with whiskey. Until the next time, cheers.